Hello, everyone. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy, a Passionate World Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Our mantra is to educate, enlighten, and entertain. The views of the guest may not represent those of the host of the station. Folks, with me today is an amazing, talented writer and author. With me today is Helen Sheehy, who grew up on tenant farms in Oklahoma and Kansas. She's worked as a dramaturg, written a theater textbook, and authored biographies of three theater pioneers: Margot, The Life in Theater of Margot Jones, hope I pronounced this right, Eva Lee Gallien, a biography. Gallien, thank you. I know I screwed that up. And come with this one, Helen and Eleonora
Duzay,
yes. A biography. The latter two books were named New York Times Notable Books of the Year. Helen has taught theater and acting at Southern Connecticut State University for more than two decades. After spending years writing nonfiction, she has turned to her earliest love, telling stories. She lives in Hamden, Connecticut, just Willa, and that's spelled W-I-L-L-A, is her first novel. And folks, let me tell you, outstanding. So talented. I felt that I was in this book with the character Willa. I laughed, I cried, I couldn't put this book down. I'm reading this book 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
I couldn't put it down.
It has everything in it. Love, determination, grit, caregiving, mental health. It addresses so many different topics.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful that I read this book, and I want to welcome you, Helen Sheehy, to Chatting with Betsy. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy that you couldn't put it down. I love that. This book has obsessed me for 20 years, I think. It's really my heart. So to hear you have that reaction, it just makes me so happy. Always when I wrote my biographies, I wanted to sort of disappear as a writer and just put you in that world. And I found that in writing a novel, that's what I wanted to achieve too. I just wanted to transport the reader to that world. And it sounds like at least you were transported. So
yes.
I'm really happy about that.
It definitely transported me. I'm from New Jersey, Helen, so I don't know about tenant farming or homesteaders.
Mm-hmm.
I learned from reading your book. So first I'm going to ask, before I get ahead of myself, and there's so much to unpack, what motivated you to write this wonderful novel?
Well, Just Willa is my fictionalized family story, and it's based on the life of my mother, Wilma. And she died when I was 36, before I had written any of these biographies, and I realized that I knew almost nothing about her. And that haunted me literally for years, because I look like her. Sometimes I'll go by a mirror, especially now that I've gotten older, and I'll see her. And it's just like, oh, there she is. So back in, I think it was 2003, just out of curiosity, because I really, you know, I left home at 18. So I really didn't know nothing. I knew nothing about her world. So I started researching the world of northwestern Oklahoma that my mother and father lived in and were formed by, you know, the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl, farming, ranching. My father was a bootlegger and a boxer, so I researched that. But, you know, Betsy, I didn't think, this was just for me, this was personal, I didn't think anybody would really care about an ordinary farm woman from Oklahoma. I mean, I'd written about famous women. So I think it was around that time in 2003 when I was working on this, I was asked to give a talk at a local club here in New Haven, Connecticut, about the three biographies I'd written. And they asked me to include at the end what I was working on now. So at the end of the talk, I told them about my idea for this novel. And I told them about my characters, Willa and Jake. And Betsy, at the end of the talk, I mean, I'd spent probably 40 minutes talking about the biographies, 5 minutes talking about Willa and Jake. The only questions they asked me were about Willa and Jake. They all wanted to know more. These were East Coast women, many of them, living in the city all their lives. You're in New Jersey. You're probably urban. And what it made me realize is that all art is regional and local and immediate, but it all comes from life. And
yes,
we all share in that. You know, everybody has a family. Everybody has parents. People have children. And so all of those emotions, all of those feelings, they're universal. So that,
yes,
that event, I was so happy that woman asked me to do that because it gave me the courage to keep at this book because I really didn't think, who cares? You know, nobody cares about this ordinary woman from nowhere. But turns out they did. So I kept going.
You know what I think, Helen, and this is my personal opinion, and I've been doing this show for 5.5 years. People can relate to human interest stories. They can relate. And that is universal. All over the world, people have... we lose loved ones. People get sick.
Yes.
You know, there's agriculture, farmers all over the world. They know what it's like to lose a crop. You know, they, the storms and the challenges with the weather and heartbreak. It's universal. So it's very relatable. And I have to say this. I love the cover of your book. I could see that your mom was a beautiful woman, and she's holding your brother, your half-brother.
Yes, my half-brother. Yep. That was in 1935. Right. That's one of the rare, I think that's the only photograph I have of her as a teenager. She was 18 there. She was, and my half-brother was 2.5, and that's on the original homestead. So you can see it's this high prairie.
Wow.
There are no trees. It's just, it's pretty stark landscape there. And it's interesting, that homestead is still in our family. It's been expanded, but it's still there. My cousin Kai has an Angus cattle operation there.
I looked at that picture, and being from New Jersey where you don't see any space of land, I'm thinking, wow, that is really flat and, empty. There's no trees. There's no buildings. There is anything.
Right. If you looked in a direction, you would see canyons, and you could see the Cimarron River. So there is more, there's sort of, it's prairie country. It's a pretty tough landscape, and that's why they had such a hard time during the Dust Bowl there. So this is 1935. So they're still in the middle of the Depression there. Those were tough times. Really tough time.
Yes. Yeah, very, very poor. I have to ask you the title, Just Willa.
How did you come up with that? Well, at first I was just calling it Willa, but that, I don't know, that never felt right. I like titles to have kind of different layers of significance. And a friend of mine, she's my early reader, a biographer friend, she suggested adding just. And I thought that was perfect because the idea was it's just Willa, just this ordinary human being, this ordinary woman, but it's also just Willa, meaning special, and she's in the center. So I like having those two different levels of meaning there.
Just I like Willa. That. But you know what, Helen? I don't think Willa was just any ordinary woman. Many things I took from the book. Your mom, this character based on your mom, mm-hmm. was such a woman of fierce determination and grit and resilience. And that was a tough time. Really, poor. I know a little bit about the Dust Bowl. Very poor. I mean, my dad was born in 1924. He lived during the Depression here in New Jersey. And what he told me was they used to go from apartment to apartment. And at the end of the month, when the rent was due, they would leave so they wouldn't have to pay any rent and go somewhere else. And then eventually he moved in with his uncle. Excuse me.
Well, so, you know what? That's
times were
amazing.
Tough.
What a lot of these people that it's based on, they were the Okies who stayed, because a lot of people did that. They just left. I mean, it was brutal. I mean, sometimes in some of the worst storms, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. I mean, it was the sky was literally black with dirt. So a lot of people, they just fled. They packed everything up and they went to California. They moved west. They just headed out. But this family, and it's partly because of my grandfather, he was a kind of entrepreneuring spirit, and he figured out how to terrace his land. And he hung on because here's the thing, Betsy. He had, and this is what a lot of people didn't have, because of the homestead, he had 160 acres that he owned that were his, that he could plant the crops, that he could run cattle on, that he could have gardens, but it belonged to him. And I can't tell you how important that is to people. And he didn't want to leave his land behind. So he stuck it out, and they managed, and they did better than a lot of people who were in town, who had a lot harder, who, didn't have chickens or pigs or managed to, get some kind of a garden going. These were the people who stayed and stuck it out, and many of those people are still there, hanging on. I mean, a lot of us, like me, moved east, got out because of I needed to get an education and find a different way of life.
Yes, and before I get into that, because I know your Willa was very big on her children being educated. Can you tell the audience what differences between a homesteader and a tenant farmer? Because I didn't know what a tenant farmer was. I never heard of that until I read your book.
Well, think about what anybody who rents an apartment. Basically, what you're doing is you're renting land. You don't have enough money to buy your own land, but you're a farmer. And you haven't been trained to do anything else. That's the only sort of work available to you. So the landowner, often they live in town, they don't want a farm. So what you can do is you can rent land, and they would often do it on shares, like 2/3 to 1/3 share. The tenant farmer, the person renting it and working the ground, would get 2/3 of the crop, and then you would pay the landowner 1/3. So it's a way for people, and sometimes you can save money, but a lot of times you don't, and you often have to have side jobs. So it's never yours. So that means that if that lease runs out, that means you have to find a new place to farm. So it's just a more precarious, existence, and it's really not yours. You find yourself fixing up different tenant homes. And Yeah, it's basically the difference between owning your own house and renting your own house, except on a larger on a larger scale.
So you're really a ton of farmers at the mercy of the person who owns the land, and that they don't have a good crop, you know, that that season, that harvest, then they're up a creek because they can't afford to pay their landlord.
Right, that's exactly right. Usually you would pay in August after harvest. You'd pay whatever you owed in August, and often you would agree on a figure. So whether or not you got the crop in, some years you might do better, but, you know, you could be wiped out by a hailstorm. So that's why people needed side jobs. You had to have something else you were doing. And in Just Willow, one of the things the family does is they have a custom hay baling operation, which means they're working all the time. They're baling for other people, and that they're farming their own land. So people are literally working from 5 a.m. in the morning until after sundown. I mean, you're going nonstop, you know, to make a living, especially if you've got kids that you've got to support.
Yeah, yes. And, you know, there was no technology back then, so you didn't know Mm-mm. about the weather, storms coming up.
No.
And, you know, it was so different back then. And, of course, they didn't have crop. Then they probably didn't eat.
Yeah, so, well, it got very tough. That's why you make plans ahead. And, mm-hmm. you know, everybody cans. You have canned food that you always can from your garden. And you really depend on, even when I was growing up, we milked our own cow. We had our own pigs that we butchered. We had cattle that we butchered, chickens, eggs. Sometimes we would sell eggs to make money. Always have a garden. So you could really live off the land, and then you would can. I even remember my mother in the 50s making her own soap. We had lye soap, which is pretty strong.
Yes, people did that. Yeah.
Yeah. She would save all the lard. She'd save all the lard and make lye soap. She mostly used it for cleaning and washing clothes. You wouldn't wash your face with it. It was pretty, well, I guess the men did. I don't think I did, but it was, so you could get along. And you learned how to take care of yourself. I remember only going to the grocery store once a month. That was a big deal, you know, going to the grocery store in town. Amazing.
You know what? I got hungry reading your book.
Oh, the food. Oh, my God, food.
Yes, before I get into the education, I got to talk about the food, probably because I'm hungry right now. But I got so hungry reading your book, and just, like, folks, I felt that I was in this book. I was at their dinner table, and you're talking homemade butter, homemade bread, fresh chickens,
cinnamon
buns.
And Betsy, the chickens were there's a dinner in the, when Willa cooks Jake the first meal, the Sunday dinner. I think it's a chapter called Sunday Dinner. And, of course, she's wanting to impress him, but she's just cooking her ordinary meal. But she could fry chicken that was so delicious. And what they used were these small fryers, like a pound and a half. So maybe you might cook like 6 or 7 chickens for the meal. But, oh, my gosh, they were so good. But what Willa was really known for was her homemade bread, which was just
– yeah.
And I think – My brother, who's a chef, who probably was closest to my mother, he likes to say about Mama, either you have the feel or you don't. She just had a gift. And I'm sure you know home cooks like this.
My grandmother was like that.
Isn't that amazing? Oh, my gosh, she was a good cook. She could make anything, and it was always so delicious. And maybe because it was fresh, I don't know if that was part of it, a lot of it, and no refined sugar. We hardly ever had lots of sugar. We just didn't. It was always fresh vegetables. We'd always have canned fruit because you couldn't get a lot of fresh fruit. But everything was not processed and fresh and just delicious.
I'll tell you what, my mouth was watering reading about the pie and the cinnamon buns
oh,
and the bread and the butter. I was like, oh, wow, that sounds great. But, yeah, my grandmother, she didn't use a recipe. I would watch her cook. I said, Gran,
right.
You know, you're not measuring. She'd be a hand of this, a pinch of that.
I asked my mother for her chili pie recipe, and she wrote something out. But it's like you say, they don't really, they just do it by feel or memory or this is the way they've always done it. So I've never been able to duplicate that. So I think that would be forever.
My mother couldn't. Yeah. My mother couldn't duplicate her mother's cooking either, and she just she didn't pick it up. She didn't learn it. And your mom was very determined for her children to get an education because I guess at that time women were not allowed to go to high school.
Well, she could have gone to high school if her father had allowed it. But at that time, it was the norm that girls would only go to the eighth grade. And the eighth grade was, it was very rigorous. I found an old exam that those kids would take in Oklahoma in the early 30s. And it's so rigorous. It covers every subject. I tried to take it, and I flunked it because it's too hard. I mean, it's U.S. history, mathematics, geography. They have to answer questions about taking care of animals and how much fence you need to fence in a certain amount of acres. And it was really, and a lot of Oklahoma history, civics, composition, even music and penmanship. And it's really, really hard. So no, she was denied an education. And Willa, my character Willa, is extremely intelligent. And that was a huge, huge loss for her because she had dreamed of going on and, you know, getting a degree and becoming a teacher herself, maybe getting an advanced degree. So she was determined that her kids get an education, particularly her daughters get an education. And I always, always felt that I really needed to go to college. And do something other than what she had, you know, I think she wanted me to have an easier life that she had. I know she did. I know she wanted me. I remember, Betsy, once I got so angry because all of us worked, and I really wanted to drive the tractor. And I think I was 10 or 11, and I was certainly old. My brothers were driving the tractor when they were seven or eight, so I could have done it, and I really, really wanted to do it. And my dad said, sure, you can drive a tractor. And my mother put her foot down, and she said, absolutely not. You're not going to do it. So while everybody else was out working, guess what I was doing? I was in the house. I was reading because she always made sure I had books to read, and that's what I was doing. And now I'm so grateful to her. But at the time, I was furious. I sulked for weeks, I think, because I wasn't allowed to do that.
You thought you were missing out, you know, in something,
absolutely.
But your mother saw, you know, the bigger picture.
Yes.
You know, and back, you know, in that time, education for women was not really a high priority because they figured, well, they'll just get married and get pregnant and have kids.
Exactly.
And that, you know, that was the thinking back then. And Willa...
Yes.
She got pregnant when she was young and had I would call it a shotgun wedding.
It was a shotgun. It was definitely a shotgun wedding. Definitely.
Yeah. And that story cracked me up. I'm not giving everything away, Helen. Don't worry about talking about the book.
I had a laugh.
I laughed and I cried in this book because there's just a range of emotions. And this Jersey girl here heard about Will, and I like his music, actually. And as a matter of fact, in reading your book, Willis, I said, I got to listen to him now. Helen mentioned it in her book. Now I got to go listen to him again. And when I was reading about his songs, I think it was someone mentioned that Benny Goodman, if he was playing near Bob, the Wilder Willis, not sure how you pronounce his last name.
Bob Wills,
Wills?
Yeah.
Wills, he would go undercover and hear Bob play, but he didn't want anyone to recognize him because he wanted Bob to have the attention.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I think I tell that to Helen.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that story. Well, he had a huge influence that she loved Bob Wills, and he loved to dance, too. I mean, both of them loved to dance, but I love his music. It's so great. Because it was that whole new sound. I mean, he was a huge influence, you know? That kind of, I don't know, guitars, fiddles, all that stuff, saxophones, clarinets. It was big. You know, it was kind of a bigger sound that they were used to. It was like string bands and a horn band. So I guess you would call it Western swing, but it really had a good mixture of music.
Yes.
It's just wonderful.
Yeah.
I know when I was writing the book, that's what really helped me, was to listen to that, listen to that music, try to listen to what Will and Jake would have listened to, what they liked, and all those songs.
That was, and then reading about Willa and Jake going to dances, this is how universal this book is, folks. I thought of my own parents who met at a dance. My mom used to, she was born in 1930, and she used to go to dances all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of my mom and reading the book my own parents' love story.
Do you know, isn't that interesting, Betsy? Because Will and Jake go to dances. This is in the 30s and 40s. And then in my own life, my own parents, when I'm growing up, I think they went to dances every Saturday night. That was everybody looked forward to that. That was the big outing, was Saturday night to go to a dance. I mean, these are country people. There was usually, they'd go to a nearby town like Enid or maybe, usually it was probably Enid or Alva, and they would all dance. And that's when they would see their friends, because everybody was so busy during the week and working long hours. But on Saturday night was, you were off. You might work Saturday, but then Sunday you didn't work. Unless it was harvest or something, then you would have to. But they really looked forward to that. They didn't sit home and watch TV because nobody had a television.
Yeah. That's right. That's why human, like, stories like this, it's universal. It made me think of my parents. Actually, it made me think, like, I knew a little bit about my mom's childhood, but she didn't discuss much, about.
Why didn't they? They never talked. I figured out my parents never talked about anything. Well, I think part of it was because nobody really had any time. Where is the leisure? I mean, I'm thinking when you have time to talk is when you have some kind of leisure. And there wasn't any leisure. I mean, I never took a vacation until I was in college. I went away for a spring breaky thing. But that was the first one I'd ever had in my life. So there's just no leisure if you're working all the time. So
That's true.
And no time to sit around and just talk. When are you doing that? It's now I think we have more time. We're lucky enough. I mean, I'm lucky enough because I got an education and I'm not working myself, working all the time.
Yeah, there's more, we have more time, we have more conveniences. And also, being brought up in the, during that depression, especially during World War II, because your book takes us from, decades, and they didn't talk. They did not talk during World War II, what was going on, because they, what's that saying, loose lips sink ships?
That's right. That's right. I know.
They did not talk. I mean, I think in New Jersey back in World War II, I think they had some German submarines that they saw.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you guys were closer to it. Right.
Caught some Germans. So, you know, and in California they had some stuff going on, but you just, you know, didn't know. I mean, like,
right.
My dad told me, and he showed me letters. He was in the war. He was in the Navy. They would block out information. What he wrote, they didn't think it was appropriate.
Of course. Sure, sure.
So,
they were concerned.
So,
right.
I have to ask.
Definitely. Sure.
You, Helen, I know you did a lot of research for this book, but you fascinate me. How did you come up? What is your creative process, like your writing? You have the characters. How did you come up with this?
Okay.
Such
I will tell
intense
you.
Dialogue.
Well, I will tell you. I was actually, my training was not in writing. My training was in theater. So like most theater people, I wanted to be an actor. I, you know, studied drama and I taught theater, I taught acting, and I became really interested in improvisational theater. And one of the things that you do with improvisation is that you start out with a character and you try to imagine them, and then you place them in a situation, and then you just sort of, you know, what do they want and what are they willing to do to get it? So with this book, I had my core characters. I had Willa and Jake. Well, I couldn't cover all these decades and tell you everything about everything.
Right.
There's too many stories. I mean, I have so much I left out of this book. There's so many stories. But I think every novel, you have to have so many stories that you're able to pick and choose the ones that are telling, the ones that grab you, the ones that move the story forward, the ones that reveal the characters. And of course, Willa is always the center, and you know, those core relationships are really important. So for example, I wanted to write about Willa's first experience with a man when she meets Big Joe.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, are we okay?
Hopefully this will be okay.
Okay, so the idea was that I would place Willa in a situation. So she's just been denied the opportunity to go on to high school. She's rebellious. She's furious at her family. So she acts out, and she's in town, and she meets this older young man, and he's a boxer, and that's how he makes his living. And she basically is seduced by him. So what I do is I place Willa in a situation, and then I literally imagine it in my head. I sit in my office, and I just play it out in my head as if it's unfolding in front of me. What Willa will say, I know what Charlie wants, I know what Willa wants. I don't know where the scene's going. I have no idea. And then I just let it play out. And then I write it down. And then I revise it, and I revise it, and I revise it. But that's basically my process. It's basically just imagination, putting the characters in a situation, like imagining my parents' first meeting. Willa and Jake, how did they meet? Well, okay, they're going to meet at a dance. Well, how does that happen? What's their first look like? What are they wearing? How do they feel about each other? You know, is it instantaneous? Does it take more development? And then it just unfolds. So it's fun, Betsy, because I know there are writers who plot everything out beforehand and outline. I can't do that because, frankly, it would bore me if I know where it's headed, because I want to be entertained too. I don't want to know what's going to happen next. And then I discover it. So that's the fun for me of writing. So
wow.
I guess I just make it up. I make it up as I go along. There you go. That's what I'm doing, I guess.
Wow. Well, you certainly have a talent. I mean, just the dialogue. How much is true, like with the
Well,
characters and
I
without giving away the plot?
no. I think the arc of the book, Willa's the basic facts, that is true. Her father was a homesteader. She was denied an education. She did have a shotgun wedding, but there's so much that I don't know, so many details, some of the big events that happened with my father and some of the things that he does with his bootlegging.
Yeah.
And I just have to, I had to imagine that. But the general arc of it and the children she have, yes, she has a devastating loss. She had a daughter who not only was afflicted with polio, but became mentally ill, was a paranoid schizophrenic, so she had to deal with that. So those are the facts. But those are just, that's sort of the scaffolding. But the individual scenes, I don't know. I left home. I don't know. And we didn't talk about any of those things. So I would say most of it is, well, actually, you know what? Connie Congdon on my book jacket said, all fiction and all true. Because there's a kind of, you know, there's an emotional truth. There's a truth that is true, that the specifics may not be true, but that emotion is true. That feeling is true. And that's what I wanted the readers to feel.
Yes,
Especially, I mean, some of those losses are just, and anybody who's gone through loss, they know that. Oh boy.
yes. Yes, that's why I cried, reading, about the first loss, and just, your book is, spans decades, but it's very relevant, and people can relate to it today. Mental illness. I'm a huge mental health care advocate, and I was glad to see that story in your book and how will it. Dealt with it, and your heart just breaks, and it's a loss. You change after a loss. That's just a
Yes,
fact. You
that's
you
true.
change, and you. I never lost a child. I don't know how that feels. I don't want to know how that feels, but that is devastating. I know what it's like to lose a spouse because I lost my spouse, and
Oh
grief
boy.
does change you, and you become resilient, and you learn to not get over it. You don't get over it. You move forward. And to me, Willa was inspirational character. She took the bull by the horns with every situation, and it's like she would say, "Get with it." She would just say,
Get with
okay,
it.
here's a problem, right? Get with it. Let's take care of it. And I just, and just all that she goes through, like her thinking that she wasn't attractive anymore to Jake, her husband,
To
and
Jake.
she was to Jake,
Of
yeah.
course, yeah.
What woman doesn't think that, right? As you're getting
Exactly,
older.
exactly.
Excuse me. All these different situations Willa has gone through and just persevered. She just continued on, and that's what they did back, oh, especially back then.
They did. They had to. And one of the reasons it was
Yeah.
necessity because there are no resources. I mean, there just are no resources. You have to depend upon yourself. I mean, that's one of, she worked for a doctor. Willa worked for a doctor when she was a young woman, and she learned how to do things. And her father was a kind of the camp doctor, and his nickname was Doc. Because you had to take care of those things. You can't be running, you know, driving 50 miles to a doctor. You have to take care of those injuries yourself. So they learned how to do things on their own. But oh, it's hard, Betsy. It's really hard. And your heart just goes out to them that, oh my gosh. I mean, not that things are easier. I mean, I think things are hard now in a different way, but it was really tough because I think what's one of the things that moves me about Willa is that she doesn't have a lot of support, and she has to do it on her own. And she thinks about that, about mothers, and about how mothers are rarely thanked. And they're not. I mean, it's just expected. You just do that. I don't know. It's so. But I'm also incredibly grateful for what I learned from these people and from my parents, especially not whining. We just, you know, we didn't have a lot of rules. You don't feel sorry for yourself. You work hard. You pay attention. And you're kind. You're just kind. You just, you know, you're a good person. That's what you do. And that's a lesson I've taken to heart my entire life. Just those simple things that have nothing to do with religion. They just have to do with being a good person. I know, yes. I've had some of my students ask me, and my nieces and nephews, what advice I would give them. And I always tell, and it was Henry James, and his advice he always gave to his nephews was, be kind, be kind, be kind. That was it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
We could all just go with that, you know?
That's so true, and I say that always at the end of my show, too.
Are you kidding? I didn't know that.
No, I'm not kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Yes, I always do. Yeah. And Willa grew up on a farm, so she saw, you know, cows, animals dying, right? And the life cycle of of the livestock. And, you know, back if the animal was injured, they would shoot it to put it out of its misery.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I just, you know, so they learned that cycle of life. Not that it makes it any easier, but she witnessed, you know, birthing of animals and the death of animals. And, of course, it's not the same as a human being. I'm not saying that it's not. But, you know, just that's a cycle of life. You know, we live, we die.
Yep. Right.
And I'm glad you also brought that out in your book.
Well, one of the things, and maybe this is partly my obsession, and it's what I tried to do with the biographies, because you're writing, I mean, I always wrote about dead people. And one of the things you want to do with a biography is to try to bring them to life in some way. One critic says biography is a spring task of bringing to life again. And for me personally, just working on Just Willa, writing Just Willa, I cannot bring my mother back to life. And Willa is a fictional character. It's not my mother. I know that. But I also know that it's what I can do. I can try to get as close as I can. If I can bring Willa back to life, if I can make her live for you, for example, then that makes, I've achieved something, because I'm raising the dead. You know, you're bringing something that wasn't, you're bringing something to life. And that for me is everything. And it helps me live with losses I've had, to know that I can do that as a writer and make something live just for a moment. It makes life bearable, because that's the task, isn't it, Betsy?
Yeah,
finding a way to live
true.
With loss, finding a way to, and there are all kinds of ways people do it, and so everybody's got to find that for themselves. What is that? How do you manage?
That's so true.
And we,
That is so true. Well, I think, Helen, in my opinion, I think your mom would be very proud of you, of the woman you became, of the books that you wrote, of this book, Just Willa, honoring your parents' legacy. To me, that's what I one of the many things I received from your book is you're honoring your mom's legacy. And,
absolutely.
You know, you did bring her back to life in this book. And there's so many times when people die, people are afraid to mention the person's name because they're afraid that somebody might get upset. Well, we know they're dead. We know they're not coming back. Tell us a memory. Tell us what good times you had. And this book does that. You're talking about the good times, the bad times. Even though, you know, it's a fictional character or based on your mom, you are honoring your parents' memories.
Right.
And I just think, wow, you know what? I would love to see this made into a movie. I really would.
I would love that.
Or docuseries.
Wouldn't that be great? I would love that, too. I mean, I've had, actually, a Hollywood agent did read it, and he loved it. But the problem is, Betsy, it's dire times in Hollywood right now. It's very, very dire. It's really not a good time. But yes, I agree. I think it would. And I think that we need to look at the past. We need to know what happened before and be truthful about it. I think that's really, really important.
Absolutely.
It was such a joy to write. I miss writing it. I miss working on it. I mean, these people are still living in my head. Even some of the smaller characters, they're just, you know, I think about Big Charlie from time to time and wonder whatever happened, you know, what could happen to him and his story, you know, the boxer who leaves Willa and goes to California. What was his life like out there in that world? I don't know. They just seem...
Would you consider... like writing another book about the other characters in the book?
I don't know. I'm working on something else right now that I've had in my drawer for a while, trying to get it right. But it's funny. I only write if I really have to figure something out. And one of the things I wanted to do with Just Willa was figure out who my mother was, because I really didn't know. And I think I did that. One of the things I'd love to ask her is, I know she would be extremely proud of me, but I would also love to ask her, like, hey, Mama, what did I miss? You know, what did I miss out? Mm-hmm. Did I miss something? And I would love to know that. But so I don't know. I'm just going to have to get obsessed about something. It's the same thing when I write a short story or an essay. Writing for me is I have to discover something. I have to figure something out, and then the answer is revealed to me. It's weird. So it's not like I have a plot idea and I try to write it down. So it's a strange process. I don't know what I'm working on something and has obsessed me for a while, and I'm trying to get it right. But it takes a long time to get fiction right, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
It does.
You know, I've really, since doing this show, Helen, I've really come to appreciate writers, authors, writers, because people spend years on books, years writing one book, the research.
Of course.
You know, the intense research that goes in. So now when I pick up a book, I really appreciate what the author did. And, you know, I just want to tell the audience, if you read a book and you appreciate that story, go on the author's website and tell them. Tell them you enjoyed the book. They want to hear that.
Absolutely. I love that. I have gotten some of that with Just Willa, people calling me or, you know, writing on my website. And I love that. You really want to hear. And what's so interesting, Betsy, is that people respond to different things. Because the book is separate from me now. It is itself. It's its own thing. And it has its own relationship with readers. So, I mean, everybody's going to feel about it differently. And so that's what I really enjoy. Some people relate to... I have been surprised, though, by how many men have told me they love this book. That was interesting to me, because I thought, okay, it's Just Willa. Is this a woman's book? But... no, I'm finding out that's not true. I was on a business podcast the other day, and we were talking about all the, and I realized as I was going preparing for that, there's so much about making money in this book and about just making a living and economics and how do people do that and the different characters and what their techniques are. And I hadn't realized that, about the importance of money in the book until somebody else had mentioned that. And I realized, oh, my goodness, in about the second chapter, yeah. Willa is counting her money, you know, and being put in charge of money. But of course, that's the reality of these people. If you're poor, you've got to think about money a lot.
That's true. Yeah. Helen, I know there's a lot we didn't cover in this book, and you are welcome to come back. If you want to talk about just Willa again or whatever work you're doing, you're a lovely guest. I love talking to you. How can people buy your book? Where can they buy your book? Where can they find it? Just Willa.
You can buy it lots of different places. You can go online to any of the online places. Bookshop.org is one. You can go to your favorite bookstore. It's really out there. So just go online. If you want more information about me, you can go to my website, helensheehy.org. I couldn't get a .com because that website was taken by a lawyer in Dublin, Ireland. So I'm a .org, but there's more information. There's also information about the book. But, yeah, so, yes, or eventually go to your library. I'm not sure if it's in libraries yet. It's probably on its way there. Please go buy the book. Find out about Jake and Willa.
Yes, folks, I barely scratched the surface. There's so much to unpack with just Willa. I highly, highly recommend you buying this book. Matter of fact, buy two. Buy one for yourself and one as a gift for someone because I know they'll enjoy it. Book can be given at any time. I'll tell you, as a former caregiver, actually I still am a caregiver, this book has caregiving in it, folks. You're a caregiver?
Yeah.
This book has caregiving in it.
Oh, it does. It does.
It really, Willa was a caregiver and a phenomenal one. I just so love this book. Helen, congratulations for a job well done. I don't know what you're going to do for an encore because this was really... I know you have something up your sleeve, but this was really phenomenal. And thank you so much for writing just Willa and coming on the show. And thank you.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. All right. Take care.
You're welcome. Take care, Willa. Take care, Helen. Folks, right. So I got Willa on my mind. Folks, all the information about Helen Sheehy can be found in the blog that Jeannie White, station manager, writes. And I want to thank Lillian Caldwell, CEO, Pasha World Talk Radio, that makes this all possible. And I want to thank you, the listeners. So thank you for listening. If you don't already subscribe to Chatting with Betsy, please do so. It's for free on Amazon Music, Spotify, Spreaker. And I want to give a shout-out to Lissa Warren, who arranged this interview. Lissa Warren is president of Lissa Warren PR, phenomenal publicist. And I want to thank Helen Sheehy again. What a book, folks. What a story. What a novel. I'm telling you, you will not be disappointed. And if you want to... follow me. I'm on Facebook, Betsy Wurzel, W-U-R-Z-E-L. And as I always say at the end of my show, in a world where you could be anything, please be kind and shine your light bright because we need it now more than ever before. This is Betsy Wurzel, your host of Chatting with Betsy on Passionate World Talk Radio Network, a subsidiary of Global Media Network, LLC. Bye-bye now.